You're listening to the RTE Rugby World Cup podcast. Darragh O'Brien here. Thanks for joining us. Bit of a podcast plus this soggy Sunday afternoon. Perfect for our mood after yesterday's game. Slap in the face for all Irish rugby supporters. Wonderful sporting occasion. You can decide where you sit on that, on either side of that particular fence. But anyway, the team have taken the bullet train down to Kobe and they're getting ready for the Russian match, which we'll show you on Thursday morning. Not too early. We're on air at 10:30 Thursday morning. Must win. We all know that. But Johnny Sexton was wheeled out despite his absence and despite his absence being very much a part of potentially yesterday's inability to change the game mid flow into something that was a little more organised. We'll come back to the dissection of the performance in a minute. But first of all, let's hear from Johnny Sexton at the Irish team press conference in the hotel in Kobe. This was just a couple of hours ago.
Yeah, it was obviously a tough game to watch, as they all are. Even if things went brilliant, it's tough to watch when you're not involved. So yeah, I was frustrated that I was on the pitch and that I couldn't help the lads out. And obviously things didn't go our way, and you want to have things in your control, and when you're sitting in the stand there's not much you can do about it. So
there's a bit of confusion, I guess, as to how fit you actually are. I mean, Joe said you were okay to play but you weren't selective. Do you feel like you're fit? Are you raring to go and ready to play?
Yeah, one thing about this team is that we back the squad, the 31 guys. We said that when we picked the squad, that everyone that's here is ready to play. And you know, when I picked up that strain against Scotland, and I wasn't going to train Monday, Tuesday fully. You know, the preparation time is so short in a 6-day turnaround that you know, the guys made the decision to sit with this one out. So look, you want to play every game, especially in a World Cup, but hopefully I can pay back, you know, the squad with a good performance this week and next and beyond, hopefully.
Where did it go wrong for the lads yesterday?
There's lots of things. We had a look at it this morning. You know, it's very early to look at things. Normally we wouldn't do that straight away, but you know, with the short day turn, 5-day turnaround this week, we felt we needed to sit down and talk about a few things. And just, it wasn't one thing. You know, discipline was obviously a big thing that we don't normally do. We seemed to get, you know, any marginal decision was we were on the wrong side of it, which is fine. You know, we looked at those penalties today, and yeah, they can be penalties. So we've got to look at ourselves there and say that discipline wasn't good enough. You know, there was a lot of access points we gave them, and discipline being, you know, top of the list. You know, we had them under pressure a few times and we let them out. We didn't exit a couple of times as well as we should have. So there's lots of just like sort of one or two things in each department that added up. And when you give a great, very good team like Japan, you know, they play brilliantly on the day. You got to give them a lot of credit as well. But I thought the boys started really well to go 12-3 up. We couldn't have asked for much more in the first 20-25 minutes, but then those errors and access points just crept in.
In your view, was there a sense of panic at all in the team? For example, if you were on the pitch, is there anything you would have said or done that helped them do anything differently to kind of get back on track and the game was getting away from them?
It's very hard to know unless you're on the pitch at the time. You know, you don't know, but sometimes you can say the best things, and if you're not doing the basics well enough and you're, you know, giving away, like we speak about those access points to Japan, if you give them and you give away penalties like we did, well, you know, you can say all you want, but you know, it's your actions that ultimately decide how the game goes. And you know, there's lots of little things that we just don't normally do that we did yesterday. And yeah, we've got to figure out why it happened. I suppose the only blessing in disguise, the last two World Cups I've been involved in, we've not cruised through the group, but we've had everything go our way in the pool stages, and we've had the day that we had yesterday in a quarter final, and we'd be going home today. And the great thing now is that we've got the rest of the pool to get things together. We know that to a certain extent things are in our own hands in terms of if we can win the last two games and score a number of tries, that we can, you know, definitely qualify for the quarterfinal. If that's in first or second place, that's out of our control, so we won't worry about that. That's done now. So it's up to us now to put in two big performances. and hopefully get ourselves into a quarter final. And we know that if we can get there, that you know, we've got a chance.
Can you learn from any of the other setbacks that have happened in this calendar year in terms of how you responded from them?
Yeah, we've responded really well in terms of the other setbacks. You know, you go as recently as things weren't going away at the start of the Six Nations. We turned things around. We had a brilliant performance against France. Things went bad against England. We turned it around and beat Wales back to back. So, you know, they're a very good team. We beat them, and we started with a bang last week against Scotland. So, yeah, if we can go on a bit of a run now, a 5-game winning run would be great. That would do nicely.
Johnny, do you feel that maybe there was so much pressure going into the Scotland game and off the back of that great performance that maybe there wasn't as much, obviously there was in the build-up to Japan, but there was so much emphasis on that Scotland game that maybe it took away from the Japan game a bit?
Well, that's true in terms of that we took the Scotland game so seriously that we prepared for the guts of 2 weeks. And we didn't sort of look forward at all, and that was the respect that we showed to Scotland, but we prepared really well for the, you know, Japan game as well. Just on the day, we didn't do the small things that we spoke about already. We didn't do them well enough, and that's the game. You know, we had lots of access points at 12-3 where we could have scored again, and we let them off the hook to a certain extent. You know, if we score then, it can be a totally different game. So. Lots of small things to fix up on, but you know, we've got 2 games now that we need to really throw ourselves into and hopefully get into a quarterfinal.
Well, Paul O'Flynn is on duty for us. We chatted to Paul last week. Paul has made it down to Kobe, and you're in the hotel at the moment, and you were at the press conference. Paul, give us your whistle report.
Yeah, well, it was interesting. I think Jonathan Sexton is always probably the most interesting of the Irish squad to be put before the media, and it was probably no coincidence that he chose this evening to do it. As you said, I mean, despite the fact that he wasn't on the pitch yesterday, he certainly had a few choice things to say about the performance, and it was just an interesting listen, really. So for me, the standout things really were, one, he used the word frustration an awful lot. I think that was referring probably to his own position. He seemed to be frustrated that he wasn't on the pitch, that he wasn't there. There's been a little bit of confusion, I guess, over the last couple of weeks as to his fitness, how fit he actually is or not. We saw him obviously play a starting role in the game against Scotland, but he couldn't kick, although he's moving freely throughout, and he said he had got a bang on the thigh early on, and I guess he's being managed by Joe Schmidt, but I think we know that Johnny's not too impressed by the fact that he was left out for the Japan game. He feels like he's fit and raring to go, but he said all the right things today. He said, look, they're here, it's a squad effort. You know, he spoke about how highly he regards Joe Schmidt, and he's, you know, 100% willing to buy in behind that, and he made the choice to put his faith in Jack Carthy and Joey Carberry on the bench to keep Johnny, you know, that he wasn't able to train earlier in the week, basically, and he missed the Tuesday session. He wasn't in a position to kind of start, I guess. So that was the decision Joe made, and he was happy enough with that. So interesting that he said that alone, but he said from watching on from the sidelines, you know, he felt that Ireland just were beaten by a better side. They had their video nasty review from Joe Schmidt earlier today, which is, they're fairly notorious, aren't they? We all know that Joe doesn't hold back in these sessions. Normally they wouldn't have it the day after the game, but because of this really tight turnaround playing Russia on Thursday, they had to kind of, I guess, squeeze their normal week. So they watched this morning, and he said the big thing that came out of it was the discipline. And we know Joe was really fuming with the referee after the game, but having watched it back, Johnny seemed to think, yeah, a lot of the penalties given against them, the Irish players really only had themselves to blame. While you might grumble about the referee and the interpretation, they put themselves in those positions, they got caught and they got pinged, and, you know, it cost them a lot of territory and position and points at crucial times. The other thing he said was execution, which they obviously talk a lot about, but that they got themselves into some great positions and just didn't finish off. But overall, he tried to strike quite a positive tone, just saying they're only small things, they're little things. They come up against, you know, a really fit, firing, flying Japan team. He said he was intrigued by how big they were. You know, they surprised almost, he said, when he saw them warming up. And it was just interesting. that having sat on the sidelines, I guess, to get his own kind of views and reactions to all of that. But he, as I said, he seemed to be positive. They're kind of just trying to turn around quickly now, focus on Russia. Looks like he'll be back. They need to get a team together pretty quickly. Bonus point is an absolute necessity. They probably won't have much worries about getting that. And then it's all on to Samoa, I guess. And striking the tone that, yeah, it's all in their own hands and they have everything to play for. And, you know, let's move on and let's put Japan behind us.
Yep, exactly. I mean, ref, let's just dump that. I mean, there were 9 penalties, but that would wash a little bit if there weren't 20 missed tackles and 15 turnovers. The humidity, I have no clue about, Paul. Just from a man, I know you hate me like referring to your own life outside of journalism, but you do quite a lot of sport and athletics and fitness yourself and swimming. I mean, would it be that extraordinarily different from performing over here?
Well, all I can say, really, I mean, I don't know about performance or running around on a rugby pitch, but I can tell you it is extraordinarily humid here. You literally have a shower, get changed, go outside, and you're covered in sweat within about 2 minutes. It just clings to you. It's that kind of humidity that just, it's like wearing a coat. You can't get it off you, you know, and it's not extraordinarily hot, you know. I mean, it is very warm by Irish standards, but it's high 20s, 26, 27, 28 degrees, but it's the humidity that absolutely kills you. And down on the pitch, like even up in the stands in the press box, there was a little gentle breeze kind of blowing through and you could kind of get your breath, but being down on the pitch beforehand and afterwards we were filming some links, it really was so oppressive, and there was 50,000 fans kind of, you know, breathing on top of you as well, which all adds to it. And I guess when you're running out of steam, when the home crowd have their dander up and the Japanese are running at you and knocking you back in tackles, it can suddenly feel like I guess so much of it is in the mind. And Keane Healy was quite interesting last week. He was actually talking about Yokohama and the game against Scotland, but he talked about how different the humidity has an effect on you. He said it's not like being in that really, really extraordinary heat where you're kind of dying and gasping for air. He said you're kind of sucking. It's very difficult, but when you stop and pause for 20 or 30 seconds, you get your breath back very quickly. But he said in those phases of play, when it's that really high intensity, that you just kind of gasp for air. And there's really nothing. Johnny Sexton actually spoke about this today as well. But like when you are playing a team that they live here, there's no acclimatization needed. All these players like live and work and train in this kind of conditions not quite all year round, but certainly in this time of the year and all through the summer all the time. So it has to be a natural advantage. Now, I don't think anyone is blaming that for the reason that the Irish performance wasn't up to their usual standards, but it's certainly a factor, I think, when you're on the back foot. And all those factors just played into it. I mean, it has to be said, it was such an extraordinary occasion. The atmosphere was really electric. And once, I think, Japan survived that first 25 minutes and they got those couple of penalties to claw their way back at halftime, I think everybody in there knew Ireland were in a real battle. I think the home crowd really just started to get behind the team. They started to believe, and Japan just grew in strength. And you can see that on television, but being there, it was extraordinarily loud. And when they scored the try, in all my years covering sporting events, it was one of the loudest stadium roars I've ever heard. So, you know, much as everyone, I guess, is disappointed that Ireland lost for the tournament as an occasion, and for Japan as the host nation, it was an absolutely incredible occasion. And I think it's something that the tournament probably needed, and I think it's it's probably no joy to Ireland that they played a part in that. No matter what happens in this World Cup, probably it's likely that that Japan's win over Ireland will be one of the standout moments, regardless of that.
Absolutely. I mean, if you were a young Japanese child watching that, just the kind of turbo boosted energy that the Japanese brought to every minute of that match would be inspirational, and credit where it's due. I mean, postmortems luckily will have to cease pretty quickly because we only have this short turnaround. But overall, the size thing is an interesting one. Like, power is the word that we're used. We were overpowered in the Six Nations at least twice by England and France. There was a worry that the same thing happened in the so-called warm-ups. Nobody really cared about that. Then it looked to be fixed against Scotland. But now it just looks like, look, Scotland are one of the only Tier 1 teams that aren't a physical threat. They aren't a power side. And you come up against Japan and you're outpowered. I don't know, is there something in the conditioning that's been misplaced? Because at 60 minutes, the game was in the balance. Ireland went into torpor. and Japan went turbo.
Yeah, it's something we've been asking them about, even actually from early on. I mean, I'm here nearly 3 weeks now, and we had that kind of long build-up in Chiba when we had those soft muscle tissue injuries to Robbie Henshaw and Rob Kearney. And it was something we asked the strength and conditioning coach, Kieran Ruddock, who is Reese's brother. And, you know, they're very confident that they've got this right and they have all the science behind them. I guess a lot of this just comes down to kind of physical attributes and genetics and all those kind of things. And Ireland, just in general, doesn't produce those kind of super explosive powerful players that you maybe get elsewhere. I'm not so sure Ireland were outpowered by Japan. I don't think they kind of had greater size in that respect than, you know, people like we have, like CJ Stander and Ty Furlong and Keane Healy and Andrew Porter. I think it was just their line speed and they're kind of fire in their bellies, really, that sort of put paid for Ireland. That's my own opinion on it anyway, just from having watched the watch the game. But look, it is, when we come up against the South Africas and the Englands of this world, it is something we do seem to struggle with. But I don't know how much you can do, what you can do about that in the gym or elsewhere. It's hard to know. I know that the Irish manager, just from asking them, they really don't seem to have any concerns in that regard. But maybe we'll see more as the tournament goes on. I mean, maybe it's something that they'll reflect upon at the end of the tournament. But physically, looking at the Irish players, they don't look underpowered or undersized compared to the other teams. But and certainly when you watch Scotland, that wasn't the case. I mean, we absolutely ripped them off the park in terms of the power game anyway, you know, up front. So it is strange to see when you have people like, you know, like the forwards played so well against Scotland and really didn't overpower Japan in the way that we might have expected they would. You would wonder. But Joe Schmidt, certainly, he always talks about this, the turnaround, and we think he's a broken record sometimes, but he knows a lot more about rugby than most of us. And he says the difference between an 8-day turnaround and a 6-day turnaround is just gigantic. The amount of effort and energy we expended against Scotland to beat Scotland and to have to go and face the host nation in that short turnaround meant it was always an uphill challenge. Now, at the same time, I don't think anyone in the Irish camp really thought they would lose to Japan, and I guess that's what makes sport so interesting and makes this tournament so fascinating, and it makes our group, well, the pool, so interesting now. The games against Russia and Samoa we thought would be kind of dead rubbers, but they've gained an importance now that we never would have expected.
Yeah, I have massive respect for Joe. Obviously, he doesn't need to prove anything, but borderline victim status, I cannot give us for a match against Scotland and Japan in 6 days. That's what a Rugby World Cup is all about. What other player news, injury news, unfortunately? I mean, it just doesn't stop, does it?
Yeah, it never does, really. Well, we have official confirmation that Jack Conan's World Cup is over. Hugely unfortunate for him, and he had been playing so well. He had an accident in training last Thursday. He was in the team to play Japan, and they trained on Thursday, and someone, we don't know who yet, actually stood on his foot. And so, I'm not sure entirely of the nature, but anyway, I think he's...
He's out, we know. Farrell and Kearney.
He's out, he's gone. Farrell got a bang to the head. He was concussed and he's out now. He can't play against Russia. He failed his HIA. Rob Kearney went off with a HIA assessment. He failed HIA 1, which is the first one, but he's passed HIA 2, so he should be good to go if they want to pick him for Russia. So a bit of mixed news, I guess, with Henshaw already struggling. They said, Simon Easterby, the coach, said today that Henshaw's running and he's running well, but they keep using this word running. I don't know if running really means that he's fully training. I'd be surprised, very surprised, if he played against Russia. So probably a little bit of a weakness at centre there. They keep clocking up, don't they? And they look, the coaches are making this point. They've been annoyed about it all along, that these 31-man squads, they're very thin when the injuries start to mount, and for whatever reason we seem to get our more of a share than most, certainly in the opening couple of rounds so far.
Okay, just stay with us for another minute or two, Paul. I know you have to head off as well. Conor Neville of RTE.ie is here. You were doing your minute-by-minute reporting yesterday.
It's a very modern skill.
It seems to be, yeah. In fairness, it is. I suppose, yeah, you got to write the crisp killer sentence.
While watching the game, I mean, it's difficult, yeah. I mean, I often wonder, do people actually read the updates as they're coming through? Do they just check the score? But, I mean, I can assure them I'm writing pure poetry under those updates. You know,
okay,
there's multilingual
can't
puns.
Can't wait for the next match. So, no, there is a skill to it, and some, like, I guess the quality of the match lends itself to.
Yeah.
You know, if you get carried away as a reporter, you can make some kind of nice quips and all the rest. But if it's a dull old match, I'd say it's murder.
Well, actually, you probably have more space to make quips in a dull match when there's so much happening and so much frantic activity as there was yesterday. The ball seemed to be in play the whole time with the Japanese running from deep. You do actually have to be describing what's happening the whole time, so it's quite. I mean, it's difficult. I mean, sometimes you at the end of a game you're less well placed than anyone to say what happened. But after a game, sometimes you need a good point man there to tell you what was that penalty for, and occasionally they're able to tell you what that penalty was for. Not always.
Yeah, very good. So it's all about you, really. So you like a boring game, so you can show off a bit.
Absolutely,
you're dead right.
Three apiece would have been fine. One of those games back in the 60s or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Three. Tell me, I was looking at Shane Horgan's piece in the Sunday Times today. He made a few good points. Lack of guile, but he also made the point that even though we won 82% of our own line-out throws, they were all pretty low-risk ones to the front or the middle, which allows the Japanese cover to kind of, it's telegraphed, as they say. They know what to expect next. There's no shortage of criticism. Tell us about Eamon Sweeney's piece, because I haven't read that yet. Eamon went on a good old...
Eamon had a particularly big rant, he was asking whether
was this anti-rugby or anti-Irish?
No, it wasn't specifically anti-rugby. There is a lot of anti-rugby about, which obviously comes out of the woodwork after a big Ireland defeat.
Yeah, there's some sort of weird class struggle going on, but anyway.
Yeah, I think it's a class struggle. Possibly football fans resentful of the profile rugby has gotten in the modern era. But Eamon Sweeney kind of steers clear of that. He does reference football in the sense that he talks about... he asked the question whether it was the worst sporting defeat in Irish history, which he suggests that the mockery of Eddie O'Sullivan because his team only scraped past Georgia and the laughter over that draw in Liechtenstein all seem a bit unfair now.
And Macedonia, back along too.
Macedonia, Cyprus 5-2 in 2006, which I think was probably worse than any of them. But certainly, he does obviously come to the conclusion that this was as bad as any of them. He has a certain alliterative phrase for it, which I'm not sure we're able to say on air. Shizuoka something something.
Oh, I saw that.
Something show.
Yeah.
But he goes into great depth and flowery detail about that. Neil Francis was particularly interesting. I mean, he actually is probably a source of a lot of the resentment of rugby from soccer people because of his claim last year that rugby was the people's game, and a lot of people were gleefully looking forward to what he was going to say. But he said the Irish players were guilty of an unforgivable dereliction of duty. And he began by saying that the only hope Ireland have of prolonging their stay in Japan is if they book their flights with Thomas Cook, which was a nice opening line. Yeah. He particularly... he had one very interesting point where he points out that, as always happens with Joe Schmidt sides, when they win, everyone plays well, and when they lose, nobody plays well, which seems to be a recurring theme with Schmidt, where because everything is so structured, once the structure wobbles, everyone seems to go with it. There is that kind of feeling often, and it's happened so many times this year. Actually, Michael Glennon on RT.ie and frequently of this podcast was particularly harsh on that point, pointing out that this is now the fourth very dramatic underperformance Ireland have had this year. Two against England, one against Wales, and now against Japan. Francis owns in on Jack Carty in particular, who obviously started the game very well and was attracting a lot of plaudits after the opening 25 minutes. I mean, and Ireland seemed to be going well as a whole. I remember he had scored the two tries, and then immediately after the second try, which he created entirely for Carney, he'd lashed a cross kick at Keith Earls and he put Kearney when Ireland looked to be motoring. But things appeared to go wrong in the second half. And Francis said that he described Carty as all over the shop in the 20 minutes prior to his departure. And he insisted that Ireland would have won with Sexton on the field. He would have directed the game better and kicked better. And so
I think it's a valid argument, but I mean, you always, after a poor performance, first panto villain is the number 10.
The number 10 or the ref. Indeed.
Yeah. I can't wear that at the moment. Seething hacks in Ireland, Paul, before we let you go, positive Japanese media reaction, any kind of headlines that you can transfer from the native kanji for us?
Well, it's extraordinary. For the first 3 weeks of this tournament, there hasn't been sight nor sound of a mention of rugby or the Rugby World Cup anywhere in the media that I've seen. It's hard to find the games on TV, just flicking around the hotel rooms. There's no mention in the newspapers. It's all about baseball. The big Subo tournament was on for the first week I was here. They kind of happen a couple of times a year, so they were dominating the back and front pages. But today, as you might expect, an absolute sea of red and white jerseys. No, my Japanese, despite the fact that I've been here for 3 weeks, isn't really up to scratch. But it kind of along the lines of, you know, the miracle, can't believe this happened. Did this really happen? Are we dreaming? Those kind of things. So I think, yeah, like I get the point, and you know, we're here as the Irish media covering the Irish team. But when you're in Japan, you have to take that kind of wider world view. And you know, it is fantastic for the tournament. It is great to have these shocks, and you know, it is one of those things that people talk about rugby. That oh, there's only four teams that can win it. There's only eight teams that make the quarterfinals every year. And I think the sport itself needs these kind of shocks to happen. Nobody in Ireland is happy that it happened to us. But I think a lot of people that it Japan played so well. They beat Ireland fair and square. They were better than Ireland, and the occasion itself, as I mentioned earlier, was just so extraordinary that I think it's hard when you're here to not kind of get swept up in that, and for a short while at least put Ireland aside and say, actually, well, we are quite narrow viewed in our focus that for the game, for the tournament, and for all neutral rugby fans. I mean, it was an absolutely cracking game. And you know, Japan were worthy winners, and it makes it really interesting. I mean, Japan have a great shot at making the quarterfinals. Obviously, 4 years ago they beat South Africa and had that kind of miracle match, but won three games in their pool, but still didn't get to the quarterfinals. And it struck me afterwards. I mean, I spoke to Michael Leach in the mix zone as well afterwards, and you know, this was 7 or 8 minutes after the final whistle, and there was no kind of emotion, there was no whooping, they weren't high-fiving, they weren't kind of, oh, I can't believe what's happened. They were very focused. They were really kind of just talking about, yep, we always knew we were going to win, we focused, targeted this game, we knew we had a chance, you know, and this is all part of the plan, and there was no getting carried away. And I really wouldn't be surprised if they beat Samoa and they put it up to Scotland in the last game. They could certainly beat Scotland if they perform as well as they did against Ireland, and they could top the pool and they could go into the quarterfinals, and like, who knows what could happen then. Now, maybe we're getting carried away, maybe they're not that good, maybe they'll struggle against Scotland, as you know, we just have to wait and see. But I think from an Irish point of view, the fact that it doesn't actually affect our position all that much, obviously everyone in Ireland would prefer if we'd done the business against Japan and we're almost qualified, but now we still have a chance of topping the pool. And this was something Johnny Sexton was keen to point out today. Their destiny is in their own hands. They can still top the pool. They can still get the quarterfinal against South Africa. And if they were going to win this World Cup, as they were talking about, this is the aim. They won't say it publicly. They were always going to have to beat South Africa, New Zealand, and most likely England, three games back to back. And possibly at the moment, that hasn't actually really changed.
Paul, keep taking.
Yeah, I think, before you interrupt me, I was going to say, the fact that we have lost to Japan, though, wouldn't give you very much confidence of us going too far beyond the quarterfinal.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's for sure. And
it's not unprecedented, though.
No, I mean,
Tonga beat France in 2011, and they subsequently revived and really should have won that World Cup.
South Africa got to the semis. Yeah, but I mean, it isn't in our own hands. I mean, that's just the maths of it. Like, we can get 16 points, but Japan can get 20.
Qualification.
And do you know, just Jamie Joseph, I mean, was that a masterstroke? You mentioned Michael Leach there, because some of the lads in studio on telly yesterday were saying, like, the fact that he was dropped was a big kind of insult, and it would have been an ego bruise for him. He came out and he absolutely added to what was already an extraordinarily powerful, focused and intense performance, and embodied
He absolutely emptied Rob Kearney the very first thing he did when he got on the pitch. Like, he was like a man possessed. And everything in coaching is a masterstroke when it comes off for you, isn't it? And everything's a disaster when it isn't.
But dropping your captain is a statement too, isn't it?
Exactly, yeah. So look, it's very hard to know. And if Ireland had won, everyone would be saying how great Joe was and that he'd rested key players and we did the business, but it backfired. And now we'll probably have to play a pretty much full-strength team against Samoa, which I don't think would have been in the plan all along. But look, that's sport. That's the way Rugby World Cups go. And, you know, it certainly makes it more interesting. I know Joe Schmidt and the rest of his team wouldn't like for it to be interesting, but for all the rest of us, I think, you know, interesting is good.
Yeah, fair enough. I'd have taken a waltz to the final myself, but no, I know what you mean. I mean, it is. They're shifting bloody narrative word again, but like there's no shortage of potential narratives now. And also, tomorrow's game, we're going to be looking at Conor with more interest, aren't we? Samoa Scotland tomorrow?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, everyone has done so many permutations there, and obviously we touched on it there. The one permutation people haven't taken account of is how good Samoa are. I mean, Scotland beat them, I think, 44-38 earlier this year. So, I mean, that's not... that's obviously... That size of a win wouldn't fill them with too much confidence, particularly in their fragile state at the moment. So the notion of Scotland waltzing through this game tomorrow is totally blown out of the water, and I it wouldn't be that much of a surprise if they lost and were put out of it. I mean, there are fears, I gather, from certain ex-Scottish players that Scotland could actually lose three games in this tournament and that things aren't well in the camp there. Mm-hmm. And that's so the notion of Samoa coming into it, and Ireland will be playing Samoa last, you would expect them to beat them, and they probably won't need a bonus point the way it's worked, certainly to qualify. But you know, Samoa coming into it could be a factor, and we'll see how it goes. I mean, ahead of yesterday, you would have still said Scotland would probably win their remaining three games. Now, Japan beating Ireland has kind of thrown out the plot line. We're not sure where we are anymore, or what's real, or what where anyone stands.
Well, that's put your finger on it, because we don't know how bad we were or how good they were. Yeah. I think everyone wants to believe that they are good.
Yeah. Certainly. One thing I've noticed is if you look at the rest of the world's reaction, what everyone believes is, and it's not surprising, is the amount of glee in the West of world rugby at what's happened. And look at when Japan beat South Africa, we remember the gleefulness that we experienced and the rest of rugby experienced that this had happened. So there is a lot of that, and there's obviously
not too much
sympathy for Irish whining. I mean, one sample that stood out, I mean, Stuart Barnes in particular has really stuck the knife in, and he said it was good for the sport. Ireland's boar snore style bites today. Endless phase play is dull and will fail in the end. And he added that it was only a medium-sized shock in his estimation, because and he says Ireland peaked in 2018, and 2019 has actually, aside from one or two convincing performances, notably against Scotland, it's been a very patchy year, and not good for Joe Schmidt's resume, he says.
Sure, someone made the point to me in 2007, Eddie gets a kicking for it, but if we were up against an Argentina and France of that standard, yeah. France vintage 2007, in our pool, we'd be looking at going home early.
It's an interesting thought, because Eddie O'Sullivan had been quite a successful Ireland manager up to that World Cup, and it seemed to everything was then coloured by what happened in that World Cup, and his previous career actually got reframed in a kind of harsher light after what happened.
That's a good point, yeah.
So in a strange way, I mean, there's a lot on the line for Schmidt here and his legacy in Ireland. I mean, it might be unfair, but I mean, if we look at what happened to O'Sullivan, now he did have somewhat more success than O'Sullivan. I mean, in terms of trophies anyway, Ireland have won a few Six Nations titles and beat New Zealand, but it will still cast a pall over his reign if Ireland underperform at this World Cup. Interestingly, Tom English, Irish rugby journalist, now based in Scotland for quite a while, he has tweeted, now I haven't seen too much take up on this, that there's a possibility of a typhoon. And I know this is a regular...
Too late.
I know this is a regular story. There's a possibility of a typhoon on Thursday when Ireland play Russia. So if that were to happen, the game would be...
Declared a nil-all draw.
Declared a draw.
If it happened in the first half.
Which seems a bit absurd.
If it was abandoned in advance, which would be more likely. Yeah, to be 3 days too late. But look, there you go. That would be fun, wouldn't it, to cover that?
Yeah. Well, I don't know, would it be fun? I mean, I think Ireland would be gone then, really, wouldn't they?
Well, the max we could get then would be 13 points.
Well, so it would be hairy.
Yeah, I mean, no, honestly, that would be a quick...
I haven't seen too much alarm. I don't expect too much alarm. That was the only tweet, and he was saying he'd heard mention of it. So maybe I'm giving it too much prominence here.
Yeah, a bit of clickbait from Tom there, I think. It's a good one, though. Yeah, so that's it. So 11:15 kickoff on Thursday, live on RTE2. We'll be on air at 10:30. So hopefully you can join us. If you can't, don't forget we'll have full coverage on Radio 1 as well. So that's it. Thanks to Connor. Thanks to Paul for joining us from Japan. Just a quickie for you this Sunday. We'll speak to you during the week on the RTE Rugby podcast. Thanks for listening. Go easy.